Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent your 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, here with my partner in crime, Judy Davis, and we're excited to be back doing another week of the Mighty Parenting podcast with you. We have more for you than the podcast, so be sure to go to mightyparenting.com/support to find out what else there is for you to help you along in your journey. Okay, I'm going to say, when I first saw the information that we're going to do for today's show, I thought it was really interesting, but I didn't necessarily think it was applicable to my family, as we're going to be talking about student athletes. And while my girls both did sports, one did a team sport, one did a solo sport, they weren't what we considered student athletes. They weren't on the high school team. This wasn't all-encompassing and intense. It wasn't their main thing. But when we started digging in and really getting into the information that our guest shares, it got really interesting. And I guess it ties back to this idea that I hear as parents all the time, we go, oh, playing sports helps our kids in life. But really seeing the lessons learned through sports turned around and applying it to leadership and applying those things to get kids working in the classroom, it was really eye-opening to me.
Well, when I heard about having Christian on our show, I was excited because sports were our family's life. We played travel soccer. We did the swimming. We did wrestling. We did track. We did every single sport my kids were at. And I learned firsthand how sports affected them, not only in the way that they interacted with other people, but how they interacted with themselves. And I saw from the sports like soccer, and you needed the team dynamic, I saw how it helped them grow and they learned things like patience and acceptance and seeing people for the skills that they were really good at and being able to help out if there was someone who was lacking a certain skill. And then I also got to see in sports like swimming and wrestling how being part of a team, more of the solo side of it that contributed to the team overall, how it helped push them individually. And that's why I'm excited to be looking at how sports impacts our kids, no matter whether they're kind of dipping their toe in and trying out some sports like at their local community centers, or they're going all the way up into the colleges and things. And with us today to talk about all this stuff is Christian Buck. He is the president and founder of Get It Done Consulting and the creator of the Sport of School Academy. He is actually a human performance consultant, and he works with sports programs to implement mental conditioning for people all over the country. And he's also the author of the upcoming title, The Sport of School: How to Help Student Athletes Improve Their Grades for High School, College, and Beyond. So thank you so much for joining us today, Christian. I'm excited to dig into this whole concept.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I love talking about this stuff, so bring it on.
Great, great. Well, you have this extensive background in helping students improve the way they perform, both on the field and in the classroom. So I just want to kind of begin with helping our listeners understand how a mindset actually impacts performance in school and on the field.
Yeah. So, you know, when I started doing this about 10 years ago, it was actually a combination of the two. And there was one particular player I was coaching at the time where he wanted to get better, and he wanted, his goal for the off season was to gain 10 pounds of muscle, which is quite hard to do in about 2 months, but I'm not going to knock him, right? I'm going to help him do it. And so every day in the gym where I used to be a trainer, you know, many moons ago, I would help him in his lifting routines. And so he did about 10 and he stopped. And I was like, well, what are you doing? He goes, oh, well, that was 10. And I go, okay, well, keep going. You have to exhaust the muscle. And he did about three more. And I was like, keep going. And he did about three more. He ended up doing about 18. And so we did that for the next 2 weeks on every exercise that he did. And he got bigger and faster and all of that. But he had this, he had an issue where he really wasn't trying in school. And so he was, you know, maybe a B minus average over the 3 years. He was a senior at the time in high school. And we decided, well, let's apply that same approach of you have more in the tank. That's what became the motto for him. You got more in the tank, and apply it to every grade that you, you know, that you're, that's in front of you, every test, every quiz, every project. And we just kept pushing the more in the tank. There's more in the tank. And so I started to recognize that, you know, grades weren't necessarily about IQ, but more about effort. And so he ended up averaging, I think, about a 95 average that year. He did it again in a PG year, a postgraduate year. And then he went on to college and did it again. And he actually transferred from that college and went to Babson and is now working on Wall Street. And he says he still thinks about, you know, I have more in the tank. So, you know, we're taking these principles that are unique, not necessarily unique, but they're accepted. We understand them in sports and just applying those same rules to school. And so it becomes more about the effort necessarily, you know, than the not necessarily the intelligence part.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I love the way you connected that to the physical effort of lifting the weights. And it actually reminds me, my daughter, who was a swimmer, but in a community group, not at school, was too intense. But she was also a musician, and there was a quote, and I'm not going to get it exact, but it's the same concept, and it was on a poster at her teacher's studio, and it said something to the effect of that practice outperforms talent when talent doesn't practice. Mm-hmm. And your idea of this isn't about your IQ. It's not how smart you are. It's how much effort you're putting in.
Yeah.
Was... to me, that's a relief. Mm-hmm. as a parent, you know, who, especially if you have a kid who is unmotivated that way, to be able to take your example and talk to them about it and show them how in their sport they needed to put in the effort, regardless of whether they have innate talent or not, they have to put forth the effort to be able to make progress. And that then that can apply the same way in the classroom. Now, do you find that students respond well to that concept initially, or does it take a little effort on the parents and coaches' part to get them to accept that idea?
Well, there's a couple of things there. So one, you know, I use sports because I was a college athlete. I have a master's in sports psychology. You know, I work with teams on the mental part of the game. You know, I also, you know, work one-on-one with athletes in the sports psychology realm. So that is what I know. And I played all the sports too, right? I grew up and played, you know, I even pole vaulted for a couple of weeks, right? So I've tried it all. So it's what I know. But if someone knows art or music or, you know, something in depth where you can say, you know, all those hours you spend on your art or your music, let's just apply that same mindset to, you know, what you're doing in school. And so, you know, I just happen to use sport because that's what I know. And it's sort of my arena. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's first of all. Now secondly, when I think you're right, it's the relief, saying that it's a relief is a good way to look at it, because it's not about how smart you are. And, you know, the person who, let's say, you know, has decent grades, they're okay. And they think, well, I can never be an A student because I'm not smart enough. It gives them the option to say, oh wait, I can do this. It's more about effort than I'm just not capable of doing it. It gives them a chance. And they definitely gravitate towards that pretty quickly. Now, you know, one of the things that I have come up with over the last 10 years is there's five different types of student athletes. And one of them, called the workhorse, this resonates very, very quickly, because the workhorse is the one that goes early and stays late and puts the time in the gym, and they do all the extracurriculars in order to improve. They already have a mindset of getting to the next level, to be the best. And so it's relatively easy for me to transfer that idea and apply it to school. And so that's what I call, you know, the have it all or baller. Let's be the have it all or baller, right? Be the guy that, or girl, that is, you know, dominating or, you know, working hard to improve in school, I mean, sorry, in sports, and just apply that same mindset to their academics.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that they don't automatically do that, Christian? I mean, you know, do you see a lot of kids that are pushing really hard in a sport, but their grades are failing? Is that common?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's common because everybody's unique. The key is if they really what their long-term goal is. And so we could say, yes, they, you know, working hard is the key and that's the way to get good grades. And that's great. But if you don't have a personal vision that's really clear of what you want to do, then school becomes a chore. Because between school and sports, which is more fun, right? I mean, sports is just going to be more fun. And that's okay. But if you can work hard and have a vision of where you want to go, what you want to do, what, you know, type of school you want to go to, and I mean college, then you've created the carrot. And that's where you get your fuel from. So I say that there's two types of people in the world. There's motorboats and there's corks. And the motorboats create the wakes. They're driven to a destination, driven by fuel. Corks just float around in those wakes. And so the key is to help high schoolers create that fuel. Where do they want to go? What's the destination? And then that's where the motivation comes from and the fuel comes from, rather than saying, just work harder. That just becomes another chore. So it's almost like you're starting from the inside out. Well, what do you want? And they might know the answer to that.
So if I'm a parent here listening and I'm going, okay, at this point in time, my kid might be a cork. And they're just kind of floating around, going to classes, participating in a sport or an activity after school and things like that. And I just am frustrated because their grades aren't great. They don't really have a lot of drive or passion. How can I help create that fuel? Is there anything I can do to help that?
Sure. And so the key, I think, is you have to be creative and not give up. And by the way, this is the same for me. You know, I might work with someone for 3 or 4 months and we still haven't figured it out. So in one of the other types is called the spectator, and the spectator just sort of watches life go by. They're sort of, you know, they're doing okay, but they don't really care if they succeed and they don't really care if they fail. They're just sort of watching it go. And the key with the spectator is to create a vision for them. So one of the things that I'll do is just go through Google images of big, you know, football schools and say, you know, look, you, this could be your life. You could go to these schools and, you know, now I'll pick schools wisely, you know, the ones that are, you know, decent, you know, grades and something that they're aspiring to, and, you know, give them, plant these seeds of what their life could look like and then going after that. So another example, that or exercise that I offer is to, take your either eighth grade to junior in high school to as many college campuses as you can. Theoretically, if you can go to some really pretty ones, that would be great, where they get to see what it's like. And you're creating visions that they didn't have before that visit. So that's what they want. Therefore, they'll find that fuel rather than saying work harder, study harder, get good grades.
I like that you're going internally to help them find their own motivation.
Yes.
So you had the workhorse and the spectator. What are the other, you said there were five, I think?
Mm-hmm. So there's the rookie, which is usually younger, but they could be a little older, meaning eighth grade. And I don't work with anyone below ninth grade, by the way. They want to do well, and they're genuinely interested in doing well, but they're just not sure what that means. And one of the clients I had texted, you know, how did the quarter end up? And he said, oh, really good. I had a B minus average, which for him was a little low. And he didn't connect what that B minus average would mean towards his future options when it comes to college. And so the rookie, you know, if you're dealing with a rookie, it's, you know, really just giving them the rules of the game. Right. It's the rules of the sport. So what, you know, people might say, well, I really want to go to Harvard. Okay. Well, you need, you know, about 100.9 average. but I might want to go to this school. You know, what do I need for that? And they might think it's very easy when it's actually a lot more difficult. They might say, oh, I'm just going to go to state. Well, you need a 3.5 to get there. Oh, really? And now at least they have a chance to go fight for that, if that makes sense.
Well, and it's so interesting because, you know, when you see teenagers and even, you know, eighth grade, they don't comprehend how the choices they make today will actually play out and impact their ability to decide their future and what they want to reach their ultimate goals. You know, like you said, they don't even know what their goals are. Sure. So how do they make the choices?
Yep.
So which comes first, you know?
Right. Like, no, it's a very good point. And you know, we got to give them a break too. You're not supposed to really know when you're 14 or 15 years old, and that's okay.
Oh, thank you for saying that, Christian. Oh my gosh. That's one of my pet peeves. Our kids are being pushed to know exactly what they want for their whole life by the time they're in eighth grade.
Yes. And you know, when we're talking about, you know, that I say we need to connect tomorrow to today. And one of the ways we do that is we say, okay, let's say, you know, what do you want by the time you're 30? And let's say someone says that they want to be in business. Okay. So let's say you want to be worth what? And they'll give me a number. And actually, it's really funny. One of the girls had said, she goes, $100,000. And I was like, why not a million? She goes, can I say a million? I was like, it's your life. Whatever whatever you want. And so it doesn't matter what the number is, but it's more to get them to think about, you know, what is happening in the future. And by the way, it's just a conversation. This isn't a, you know, we're not taking notes on it. And we say, okay, let's say it's $1 million, whatever it happens to be. One of the kids had said, I want a house in Switzerland and Denver. He was just, I was like, okay. I mean, look, if that's your dream.
That's the dream. Let's go. Yeah.
So at least he had an image. I was excited. So I said, okay, let's say that's about $3 million. Well, what job are you going to get when you come out of college in order for this to start to happen? You know, we need a pretty good job. Okay, so then we need to go to a relatively good school. For the most part, by the way, this is totally generic. You don't have to. Right. You can go to community college and still make $300. That's not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But so let's go to a better school to make this happen. Okay, so let's study tonight in order for all this to start. And so, you know, the interesting thing about, you know, adolescence is their prefrontal cortex isn't developed fully until about age 22 to 25. And that's where the processing happens and the consequences are understood. So they don't really have a biological easy way to think about their future, you know, their future in general, how it connects today to tomorrow. So it needs a little bit of handholding in an exercise like this to get them to just think about it for a second and see how it connects. Because again, now we're creating that fuel. If we just say, do it because I said so, because I know better, which by the way, we know better, right? We know that working hard is a good idea, but it doesn't matter what we say. It's we need to create that vision and that fuel for them. And one way to do that is connect tomorrow to today.
I love that.
I do too. But I want to know, so we've gotten three types of workhorse. What's the next one? three types of student athletes.
Right. So the last two are very interesting. One is the natural talent. And the natural talent is the one that can, you know, pick up any sport very quickly, sort of amaze us with, you know, how good they are at anything they do. So, you know, certainly physically. And what is really interesting about them is that when they're out, quote unquote, practicing, usually on their own, and they will put the time in, they, because they're so good, they just play. And it might look like work to us, but it's something they're very competent at, and it's enjoyable, and they love it. But what if they were, let's say they were a soccer player, or a runner, or whatever it happens to be, something like that, team sport. And we said, okay, let's go try diving. And they're not particularly good at diving. They don't get the part where they have to work for it. So the natural talent's really interesting because they're always playing and rarely working. And so if someone you know, is really good at English and history, they're very naturally gifted at it, but they can't do math, and they're a natural talent as well, they just don't understand the idea of sitting down and working for it. It's unfamiliar to them.
Yeah. So how do you help them get that concept?
Good point. So
the idea of how do you teach them Yeah, yep. We get you so, haven't run into this before. And now for the first time in your life, you have to actually work at something.
Yeah. And so that is one grade at a time. So one of the keys to getting good grades is to stay in the present and just go one at a time. Now, they have to commit to it. That's one of the issues, right? We can decide to get good grades and that's nice, but committing to it is a whole other thing. And the example that I use a lot that, you know, all the kids understand is, you know, every year when you walk in on the first day of school, you know, you think, all right, this is the year. This is the one I'm really going to turn around. And then about 6 days later, you're right back to your old habits, right? Mm-hmm. And trust me, I know it well. And so it's helping them on a day-to-day basis understand the value of effort and putting in the time. One of my clients, one of the best players in the country in his sport was a total natural talent. And we would just focus on working hard every day for every quiz and just, you know, keeping that mindset on a continuous basis. And the way you do it is whether it's a quiz, a homework, a test, a paper, it doesn't matter. You go all out just like you would in every game that they play. And they understand that quickly. Oh yeah, I know I do that in a game. I know I do it in practice. I just need to do it at home with homework or studying, whatever.
Well, and I like that comment you made where you said to stay in the present, but work on one grade at a time. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about it before, but I think we can have a tendency to just lump school as like one big thing and go, you need to bring up your grades.
Yes.
And that's overwhelming.
Absolutely. And you know, you say, okay, well, how do you get a 4.0? And they'll be like, oh, well, 4.0. I don't know. I'd have to do this and that. And I'm like, no, it's just one. Can you get 100 on a quiz tomorrow? Yeah, I guess so. Could you get a 90 on your test if you studied enough? Yeah, I could do that. Could you do all your homework? Sure. Well, you're looking at roughly a 95 average. Mm-hmm. And so when you break it down to the, you know, step-by-step process, just one at a time, you know, a 4.0 GPA, and we're just using that, you know, right, just in general. But a 4.0 GPA is broken down to what you did on homework, what you did on quizzes, tests, projects, papers, and labs. And so if you say, okay, can you do that on this one thing? If you had enough time, could you do it? Yeah, I could do that. And so it's just when you stay in the present, and let's say, you know, the first week of class, you might have a quiz or two, you get hundreds and then maybe 90s, whatever it is, you do it the next week and so on and so forth. By the end of the quarter, you actually have a 4.0. But to go out and say, go get a 4.0, you're right. It's too overwhelming. It's too much. You know, it's a mountain too big.
It's interesting because I'm thinking my brain is just twirling right now because so often our kids will say they want one thing, but they aren't willing to put in the effort. And often that's because they don't know what effort is required to mm-hmm. get it.
Yes.
So you telling us to break it down into bite-sized pieces and just focus on doing the next thing makes all the sense in the world. And I think it's something that because of the fast-paced society we live in, helping our kids learn skills to slow down to reach their goals faster is really powerful.
Yeah. And speaking about the effort of that too, you know, one of my things to get the whole, you know, to kick it off, to get the, you know, that fuel going is if you're committed to it, that you take whatever is the next quiz or test, and you try, you don't have to, but you try to get 100 on it. Because we have to understand a barometer that, you know, okay, I studied really hard and I got 100. And now they know what that feels like. They have some sort of guiding light that says, okay, that's what I need to do. And I'll tell you, over the years, the people that make the big changes, let's say from a B average to an A average, they all say it's just an extra 20 minutes a night. And if everyone can sign up right now and say, okay, for 20 minutes a night extra and I can have a 4.0, I would do that. But if you say, go get a 4.0, it's too enormous. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's putting in that effort one time, just once. And then, by the way, I recommend leaving them alone for a week. If they did it once, congratulate them. It's great. But we can't push. Oh, you should do it again. You should do it again. Okay, I got it. But you let them sort of sit in that, you know, process what they did and how much effort they put into it and realize that, you know, it wasn't that hard. And by the way, if they do well, they feel really good about it. They want to do it again. So we got to get them commit to just one quiz that they're going to go all out on that will start the machine going.
And I think as parents, if we pull back, like you're saying, give them the time and not push for the next one, we're helping them take ownership of their success and not go, oh, mom pushed me to do it.
Yes.
It's, you know, they're going to take ownership. And isn't that the goal, is for them to become self-motivated, them to have their own barometer of what hard work actually means, mm-hmm. and what, you know, by working and doing this, it equates to that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love it. I love it.
And the other interesting piece of that, Christian, is essentially you pointed out a mistake that parents are making, which is as soon as there's that success, we get excited and we start pushing it. Are there other things we're doing in, you know, trying to help our kids? Are there other things we're doing that are actually not helpful or detrimental?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a difficult one to answer sometimes because you don't want to say that everyone's doing anything wrong. But one of the things that I have found that doesn't necessarily work long term is paying for grades, or, you know, giving cars for grades, I've heard of. Because let's say, you know, I heard this example once where, you know, if you get all A's or whatever it happened to be, if you get, you know, if you improve your grades, we'll buy you a Jeep. Okay, so that's a luxury that not a lot of people have, but this family happened to have that luxury. And you, let's say they do it. Let's say they accomplish it. They improve their grades to whatever the standard was. Well, what are you going to buy them next year? A tank? Like, what's the plan? And then what are they going to do in college or when they get their first job? And so when we have that extrinsic motivator, the key to that is you'd have to have an extrinsic motivator all the time. So the way I look at it is, okay, how can I inspire them to find that intrinsic motivation? I want to do it just because. And, you know, I'll talk about Tiger Woods, and, you know, Tiger Woods wants to be, you know, at the time when he was young, he wanted to be the best golfer in the history of golf. That's what he wanted. It was an intrinsic motivator. And he worked really, really hard to do that. And he did a whole bunch of things along the way that, you know, we could get more into in the sports realm. But with that effort and that desire to be the best came the success and the fame and the money or whatever, you know, whatever you want to be. So by focusing his personal focus to be the best, that's how we got the rewards that came with it. And so instead of giving them rewards, the way I look at it is how do I help them find that intrinsic value, that intrinsic motivator that is going to put them on what I call autopilot. That they're just on their own. That's the key. Not forcing them to do anything, but how can we be creative in getting them to figure it out themselves and want it themselves? That's what we need to focus on.
And that's tough. I mean, as I think that, I go, how do I do that? I mean, I know how to motivate them to do my dishes, but I motivate them to do other stuff, you know?
Yep. No, it's definitely not easy. And, you know, one of the keys is to figure out what they want. Now, one of the first things that they may want is to be left alone. And let's just be honest about it. Okay, I get it. Why? Well, you know, my parents are always bothering me. You know, they're always pushing me. Oh, okay, that's great. You want to be left alone. Now they leave you alone. Now what do you want? And one of the girls I worked with for a whole freshman year, and then I asked the same question for 5 weeks in a row. What do you want? And she ultimately said, I want to go to a Division I lacrosse program and I want to go to a really good school. I said, okay, good. Now we can figure out what's the path to get there. But without that, it's just sort of, you know, more chores.
Well, and what's interesting about that is you said, you asked her the same question 5 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. As the parents living with a child, we don't necessarily give them that much time to think about something.
Yeah.
You know, we ask them, and later the same day or the next day, we're looking for an answer. I think sometimes what we do need to do is what you just mentioned there is leave them alone. Let them have time. Maybe pose that question, but give them time to actually ponder it.
Right. And so one of the things I talk about in the book is, you know, our goal is not to prepare them for the next 4 years, but the next 40.
Yeah.
So, you know, to take 5 months to figure that out doesn't seem like a very long time. Mm-hmm. And another thing very similar to this, which I never would have known going into it, but it's fascinating to me in a way, is one of my clients, he had like a 82, 83 average, wasn't particularly, sort of the spectator, just sort of going through the motions. And it was about 4 months into it, he said, well, what if I really try and I still can't do it? And I go, that's the most genuine thing you've said, the most honest thing you've said since we got started working together. But that's real. Like, that's a real fear. If you feel like you can't do it and you really try and then you still can't do it, you have nothing left but to consider that you're just not smart. And that is a real factor that goes into how kids go about their schoolwork.
How would you answer that? If a child said, you know, I go to the mental health side of that and go, if the kid says, and what if I fail or can't do it? And maybe they can't. What do you say to that?
Well, that's a good point. And so it's not necessarily about the grades, but the effort they put into it, right? Because I don't care what the GPA is. It's irrelevant to me. But it's how hard they go to get those grades, no matter what they are. One of my kids had like a 78 average, and he worked so hard to get to an 88 average. And so, look, I will take that all day. It doesn't have to be A's, but he just worked at it. And the rest of his story is very interesting. And he worked really hard in the weight room. He started working really hard on the lacrosse field. And he went to college, and it became his identity, like how hard he worked. And he told me in research for the book, actually, he told me that he would walk around campus and just – like pick out people and say to in his mind, I work harder than that guy. I work harder than her. And it became his identity. So I don't know how, I don't even know what his grades were, after we stopped working together. So that's irrelevant, but that identity of I'm a hard worker, we know as adults that is a huge value. And so we change it away from results to, the process.
Well, you say that in your book, Christian. You say it's easy for us to get caught up in grades, but you talk about why the grade isn't always the win and ways that we can spot and reward effort. So what are some of the ways that we can tune ourselves in to see the effort that our kids are making and reward that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is, and this is so funny. Have you guys read Carol Dweck's book, Mindset?
No, I have not.
Okay. So one of the things that really stood out to me that I still remember, and I might have read this 10 years ago now, was being of a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And so what she says is that a fixed mindset is that you are born with a certain amount of ability, whether it be academic or athletic or artistic or whatever it is, and that is set in stone. And so you're going to spend the rest of your life justifying that whatever you were born with was enough, versus a growth mindset, which says that you can always improve in anything that you do, whatever your ability is, artistic, athletic, academic, whatever you put your mind to, and that you're always open to learning more. And so the example she gave about this, a growth mindset obviously is about effort, because the more effort you put into learning, the more, the more you're going to grow. She said that an example was a girl comes home with a quiz, and she says, hey, I got 100 on my quiz. And the parents respond, wow, that you're so smart. Let's put it on the fridge. Which seems to me like a pretty normal reaction. It's certainly one that I would have had. And what she's saying is, instead of reacting that way, you say, wow, that's great. How much did you study? Oh, well, not that much. It wasn't a very hard quiz. Oh, well, maybe they'll challenge you next time. And it's a small, nuanced approach, but it puts the emphasis back on the effort and challenge rather than the grade and the result. I got 100, therefore I'm smart.
And I love that.
And I think that's just an American thing. I think it's a society that we fall into that trap.
Well, and Judy had talked about that. And Judy, I can't remember which show it was or if it was even in the private podcast feed, but you talked about, it was in the celebrations episode where you were talking about this idea of you didn't work for something, you just quote unquote achieved it, and everybody else is excited and celebrating and making a big deal, and you're like, who cares? And it was irritating rather than a good thing. Yeah. Whereas what you're saying, Christian, is we don't need to denigrate it. We can go, oh, okay, well, that's cool. And I liked the way you did it, where you said, maybe they'll challenge you next time, because there's a subtle undertone of, you've got more. And I know you can, whatever they throw at you, you can stand up to it. And I like that undertone.
And I think it's very empowering to our kids, because then it shows that we really know who they are. So often our teenagers go, my parents don't know me. They don't get me. They don't understand what I'm going through. And those kind of subtle nuances really do help without saying, I understand you, share that message of, I get you and I see you for who you really are. And let's not sugarcoat it by a grade, because that's not defining you.
Right.
Oh, I like that, Judy. The grades aren't defining you.
Another thing as well that, one of my kids, we're talking about, going the easy way out and getting hundreds. And I said, well, what if I could break into the school system and give you all hundreds throughout high school and throughout college? What would you do? And his response was, not much. And I was like,
interesting.
Right, so where's the value in that? You're going to miss 8 years of learning to just get A's. What are you going to do when you're 22 and you have to get that first job and you skip the last 8 years? And so it becomes more about the learning and put effort into learning and whatever the grades are what they are.
Well, and that goes back to tying things to some degree to their dreams. Although in actuality, our system is set up to say, play the game, get the grades so you can get the dream. But what you're talking to us about teaching our kids is focusing on the effort and what you need to get there. So it's not going to just be that you need grades to get the dream. You're also going to be talking about what they need to understand and the skills they need. And some of that will come from the sports that they play or the organization or whatever. As you said, this applies to other activities, orchestras and in art groups and all kinds of things. But I like the way that ties together. But we're still missing one type of student athlete, and I want them all.
So the last one is the intellectual, and the intellectual is driven academically already. They for whatever reason, they want to go to MIT or the Ivy League or, what I call the Pacassandra League, which is like Ivy, it's just not as nice. And, that's going to be your Georgetowns and your Michigans and Stanfords and, one of those top tier schools. And what the intellectual deals with a little more than others is a perfectionism. That they put this pressure on themselves that they have to do well, extremely result-oriented, that every test and quiz has to be, the highest grade. Not the best result as far as how much effort they put into it, but, let's say they work really, really hard. For example, AP U.S. History is always very difficult, and they might get an 86, and that's not good enough in their mind. When they studied for 3 hours, to me, that's good enough, not the 86. And so it's changing that view away from result and putting it into process.
Yeah, and quick little tip, which is a little off sidetrack. We ran into the AP US history thing. And what we found with my daughter is she transferred from, because I thought AP US history, I was like, oh my gosh, a college class would be so interesting and it'll be so in depth and about great discussions. And it was all about teaching to the test. And crazy amounts of work to even do that. So she ended up transferring into the world history class, which our local community college gave direct credit for. So she actually got into history classes. She got that with exactly what we thought she was going to get before, great discussions and things. So just a little side note, but we're on the student athlete subject. And when you brought that up, that's one of my soapbox moments, is that it's one of those things that schools tend to push at our kids, and I've seen a lot of kids get chewed up by that particular course.
Yeah, that is a worker's course. There's just so much reading and writing that if you're not motivated and dedicated and disciplined, it will spiral out of control pretty quick.
Yeah. So another thing that you talked about before, Christian, is you said that you have four action steps all students can apply to get better grades. Can you talk about that?
Sure. And we've covered some of them, but one of the first one is one grade at a time. right? You just focus on that one grade at a time. You stay, you know, focused on the process, and you know, you do the best you can for each one. And to give you a quick example, I work with a Division I college lacrosse team, and the year before I got there, they were, their record was 2-14. And we decided, okay, we're going to forget about that. We're going to stay in the process, and we're just going to work as hard as we can all the time, whether it's in the weight room, academically. We're just going to become people who work as hard as we can on every given day, meaning practice, you know, whatever, you know, games, obviously. And it became this identity of, this is what we do. We just outwork you. And they went from 2-14 to 9-7 the next year, which is the best season in the history of the program, and their first winning season in 15 years. And so, you know, we take these things back, and that's why I take them back and forth from sports to academics, because I can give that story to a young athlete and say, oh, you know, he might say, I get it, or she, I get it. Like, okay, I'm just going to stay focused on the process, just one grade at a time. A hockey player would focus on one shift at a time. A pole vaulter would, you know, one jump at a time. It's just one thing at a time. And they get that. It's quick, meaning that it doesn't take a ton of explanation. Secondly, is to practice mindfulness. And it's not the mindfulness that has sort of gotten universal play in the last couple of years, but more of being, if you're going to be in class, be in class, be aware. One of my clients, she's great. She's a hard worker. She gets really good grades. She's such a good kid. And what she'll do in class is write down every single thing that the teacher says. Why would someone do that, do you think?
Well, partly it could be, I never thought of it before, but to keep her focused in there, but it could also be out of fear, afraid I'm going to miss something.
Right. And miss something for what?
For the test.
Exactly. Right. So now she's writing down everything she can so that she can study it later to do well on the test. Instead of being in the classroom, being mindful, being aware, and being part of the conversation, understanding the concepts, being able to talk about those things, and, you know, and then increase your knowledge, not necessarily what you have to study.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lost that a long time ago. And I was guilty of it too, you know, no doubt. But that is one of the keys is to, what if you're going to be in class, be present, mm-hmm. learn from, you know, have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Think about it. Because you're really not thinking, you're just dictating. And,
well,
and you'll
exactly.
study yeah. later.
That was one of my gripes when, especially at the college level, professors wouldn't post notes and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how are these kids supposed to, like you said, I didn't use those words, but I love it. How are they supposed to be present? How are they supposed to just try to understand and apply these concepts when they have to go full board just trying to write down the stuff that you wrote on the board?
Yeah. And one of the things that not everyone, this is hard, but when someone's ready for it, it works. That at the end of each class, take 2 minutes and write down 1 to 3 themes of that class. And so you want to think of that information that you were learning in a three-dimensional way. Okay, how does that relate to me? How could I use that in my own life? What is, you know, what's unique about what we're talking about? What are the general themes that she was trying to get across, or that, you know, or he was trying to get across? And so you can, and write those at the bottom of your, you know, the notes or class notes for the day. And so it forces you to think about this information more three-dimensionally in a sense. And then you can process it in your own language, rather than writing down every single thing that the teacher says and trying to just regurgitate that on a test.
And I think that's a simple thing that is a skill we all need.
Sure.
Throughout our entire yep. life. I mean, I think about going to conferences or things like that where I'm inundated with information, mm-hmm. and I never take that moment to go, how does this apply to my life? And how does this apply to what I'm trying to accomplish?
Yep.
And so that simple tip to give our kids is going to help them way beyond their yep. grade in that class.
Right. And remember, my goal is, you know, to prepare them for the next 40 years, not the next 4. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I know, as a business owner and a guy who was on Wall Street, for 10 years, that, you know, those are the kinds of things that are going to create much more success long term.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can practice that and get better at it, I mean, look, you know, if you're going to be successful, you're going to be able to think, We need people to think and not just regurgitate information and get hundreds.
And so what are the last two steps?
One is to foster autonomy. And once they, and we talked a little bit about this before, once they are independent and they're on their own, then you'll see that's the key, right? So that we're not pressing them all the time. Now, you might have to press them for a little while, but if we can give them a little bit of space and have that autonomy that it's their choice to do it or not do it, by the way, then they will feel the consequences because it's their own. They'll have their own buy-in.
It just adds to that intrinsic motivation idea that we talked about before. It kind of goes hand in hand with it.
Yes, that's true. But also, one of my kids that I was working with, the parents, you know, were, I don't say strict, but they wanted him to do well, and he wanted to do well, but it wasn't clicking for him yet as far as how hard he was working. And so I suggested to the parents, just put him on an island. Just let him go. Let's see what happens. And I said to him, I said, look, I suggested to your parents that, you know, just you're on your own. Let's see what you got. And now it's a bit different. There's no training wheels anymore. You know, there's no excuses. Now, I understand that that's a little nerve-wracking as a parent. I understand that. But if you give them a week or two and say, you know what, do whatever you want for a couple of weeks. Now, that doesn't mean go play Xbox all day. But as far as, you know, we're going to lay off the grades and let's just see what you're made of. It's another way to challenge them in a positive way. But it's their own choices at that point.
Well, it's going to happen at some point in their life.
Yes.
And Judy and I have talked about this ourselves, and we've talked about it on Mighty Parenting Things, is yes, it's scary. And especially when we're talking about our kids or teens or early 20s, you know, in college or just starting off in a new job, it's scary to let go. And the consequences are so much bigger than when they were two. However, the consequences when they're 25, 30, 35 are going to be even bigger. So, mm-hmm. We need to get our own fear in check and give them that space and maybe let them fail and deal with some unpleasant consequences now before it turns into something even bigger that they're dealing with.
Yeah. And the last one, by the way, is the growth mindset that we talked about before, that, you know, putting effort into learning rather than getting good grades. That's one of the keys as well, because the smarter we are, you know, theoretically, you know, the more successful we may be, obviously. But one of the things that I say is that there's three components to being successful long term. One is having a work ethic. We got to have a high work ethic. You know, people that say work smart, not hard, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think you can do both. I think you need to do both. Second is some sort of intellectual curiosity. You know, there has to be some, we want to learn about something, you know, that interests us, or, you know, that's why choosing a job that's interesting to us, and we'll put in the time to learn. And last is the ability to solve problems, right? If the way I looked at it, especially in the Wall Street world, if I'm going to hire someone, I need someone who's going to solve problems. And if we could put work ethic into solving problems, now you're looking at a pretty good candidate. And, you know, the way I relate this back to my clients is, algebra to me is just a language to solve problems. You know, I tell them, you're never going to need sine, cosine, and tangent again, right? That's not going to be part of your future. But putting the effort into solving the problem, that is vital, instead of giving up or saying, it's not for me, or I can't do this, or whatever it is. It's being able to put that work ethic into solving problems.
Yeah, when kids ask, you know, what am I ever going to need this math for? We're like, you're going to need it every single day of your life. You're just not going to put numbers in it.
Exactly right. Yes.
Yep. So this has been really interesting, Christian, and a lot of connecting some dots that I hadn't connected before. So I just want to go back, though, because you really shared a lot with us. So I want to summarize a little bit. And of course, all of this is on the show notes page, and you can re-listen to this in your podcast player, wherever you're listening to it, or on mightyparenting.com. But basically, you work with the idea that our mindset impacts our performance, no matter where we are, on the field, in school, or wherever. And that's what's going on with our kids. So as parents, what we want to do is help them with the mindset. And when we have a student athlete, there are five different kinds, and the way that we work with them is different. So one is the workhorse, which is the person who does that. They're a workhorse. They stay late. They are early. They show up. They do everything they need to do to improve. And you were telling us that it's really easy to translate those concepts and just have them take those concepts and put them into their schoolwork or something else they want to do. But just that helping them see that effort is what gets them results.
Yep.
Two is the spectator, which is someone who's kind of just going with the flow, watching life go by, just letting it in, letting it happen to them. And so for them, what we want to do is work with them to help them go inside and figure out what they want and create a vision for themselves. Then we have the rookie, which is somebody who's younger and they want to do well, but they don't know what that means. They don't know how to do it. So essentially we need to help them understand the rules of the game, help them see how their effort translates into grades and the grades help them get their future, whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Then there's the natural talent, someone who picks up any sport quickly and easily when they're practicing, when they're playing. It just comes naturally, comes easily to them. They haven't had to work hard. And so we may just have to help them see that, hey, you haven't had to work hard before because you had natural talent here. But in this other area where you don't have natural talent, the effort can make up for that and just help them to make that, switch and that connection. And the fifth one is the intellectual, who is someone who is already academically driven, but they can tend to deal with perfection. So we need to help them look again more at, hey, you know, how much effort did you put into it rather than worrying so much about the result of that. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to working on the school stuff, you said there are four action steps all students can apply to get better grades. Look at one grade at a time. Practice their mindfulness, the actually being present in the classroom, not just trying to write notes. Foster autonomy and work with a growth mindset. But more, even it sounds to me like it's even really more important than all of this is to remember that what we're doing, as you said, we are not just helping our kids. We're not raising our kids for the now or the 4 years from now. We're raising them for 40 years from now. And that means that they need what you talked about is the three components of success: having a good work ethic, an intellectual curiosity, and the ability to solve problems. And the more that we can help our kids foster that through sports, through grades, through extracurricular activities, the better off they're going to be. So for people who are digging into this and going, oh my gosh, this is amazing, Christian, where can they find you?
So they can find me at christianbuck.com or sportofschool.com. And, you know, the book, Sport of School, is also on that website. And you can find that book on Amazon and actually a lot of other carriers as well.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. And we just want to say to all the parents out there, you are a mighty parent. This information can help you in all kinds of ways, whether you have an athlete or a kid that's kind of just trying to figure out what they want to do in their life. All of this stuff that Christian shared with us today is awesome. This is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler. We will see you next week.